the program is Against the Grain on Pacifica Radio and online at kpfa.org. Sally Phillips is at the controls. Sasha Lilly is on leave. And my name is C.S. Song. We turn now to examine the conduct of a single oil giant, Chevron, in the country of Ecuador. Chevron is currently in a lot of hot water over allegations that, among other things, it contaminated a huge swath of Ecuador, devastating the environment and also indigenous communities over a period of several decades. Joining me now in studio is Simeon Tagle. He's Director of Communications for Amazon Watch, which works with indigenous and environmental groups in the Amazon Basin to defend the environment and advance indigenous people's rights in the face of large-scale industrial development. He spent much of the last year working on the Chevron, Texaco, now Chevron, in Ecuador campaign. Welcome to the show, Simeon.
Hi, C.S. Thank you for having me.
So when and how did Chevron first get involved in oil exploration and development in Ecuador?
Okay, this goes back quite a long time. Chevron were operating in Ecuador from the mid-1960s through to the early 1990s. During that time, they drilled for oil. They made profits of approximately $30 billion from their Ecuador operations. They also dumped 18 billion gallons of toxic waste into the rainforest, into a pristine but inhabited area of Amazon rainforest. They did that because when you drill for oil, typically you get up this toxic gunk called formation waters, which has all kinds of heavy metals in it. It also is typically about 2% crude oil. The industry standard procedure in the U.S. Is to re-inject the formation waters back below the ground. That did not happen in Ecuador. Chevron decided to save themselves money, maybe $2 or $3 a barrel of produced crude. They decided not to do that. As a result, they dumped 18 billion gallons into streams, rivers, in an area of the Ecuadorian Amazon, approximately the size of Rhode Island, about 1,000 square miles, where the people who live there, colonists and indigenous communities, are entirely reliant on natural water sources for all their daily water needs. This went on for roughly three decades. And what we are now seeing in this part of the Amazon is a public health crisis. There are birth deformities, there are miscarriages, there is really rocketing rates of cancer. We don't know the full scale of the public health problems there. This is a remote area of a developing nation where many people sicken and even die without receiving medical attention. So it's a human and an environmental tragedy, and it's one that would have been or was completely avoidable had the Texaco executives at the time had been focused on anything other than profit.
How was Chevron able to do this on such a large scale? Weren't there some at least national laws that would have regulated Chevron's conduct within Ecuador and provided some monitoring and oversight over its operations?
That's a good question. There were some national legislation relating to this, and it's using that legislation that this court case, a landmark environmental court case, is now going on in Ecuador. But again, this is a developing nation. This started back in the 1960s with limited resources and capacity. There's also corruption. And the Ecuadorian state either lacked the will or the ability to enforce its environmental legislation, and Texaco was very happy to take advantage of that situation.
And did institutions like the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank play a part in possibly preventing Ecuador from doing what it wanted with respect to Chevron?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I can tell you that I think the power relationship between this huge oil company from the north and the Ecuadorian government and also Ecuadorian society was it was a David and Goliath situation, and perhaps the least powerful citizens in Ecuadorian society are indigenous citizens from the Amazon. They live remotely, and they do not have the ability, unfortunately, or the capacity, at least until now, to really defend their own rights and their lands.
Before we talk about the landmark environmental case you just referred to, back in the 1990s, I understand that Chevron was either called to task or it voluntarily agreed to remediate some of the contaminated areas you're talking about. What do we know about what they did then and how effective it was?
Back in the 1990s, Texaco, as it still was, Texaco became part of Chevron in 2001. It formed, the corporation was called Chevron Texaco, and then last year they dropped the Texaco part of the name. But back in the 1990s, Texaco and the Ecuadorian state reached an agreement that Texaco would remediate these sites. Texaco says it spent $40 million doing that. That's actually less than 1% of what we now have calculated, or the plaintiffs have calculated, to be the true cost of remediation. What the remediation consisted of, essentially, was Texaco sending in bulldozers to bulldoze soil and other forest debris over these open-air pits. It did not remove the contamination. It effectively hid it. And that remediation now is the subject of much controversy in Ecuador, and two new legal fronts, in addition to the class action environmental lawsuit, have opened up as a result of that. One is that the Ecuadorian government is now suing Chevron for fraud. That's a civil suit in a federal court in New York. And the other is that the Ecuadorian Attorney General has now launched a criminal investigation into that remediation, again, looking at the possibility that Texaco committed fraud in some way.
The class action suit you referred to, this is a class action civil suit brought in Ecuador, claiming, I think, $6 billion in damages. You can correct me if I'm wrong about that. How did this suit originate, and how are the litigants, the plaintiffs, able to prove or demonstrate that the contamination in these areas still exists?
Well, it's been a long road to get to where we are today, which is now possibly within six, I would say certainly within 12 months of a judgment from the court in Ecuador. This initially began in U.S. courts back in the 1990s. The reason was that Texaco was a U.S. company. However, it was decided, I think some 4 years ago, that the most appropriate venue was Ecuador. So the court case was switched down to there. And what's particularly interesting about this court case is that the U.S. judge imposed a condition in switching that jurisdiction, which both the plaintiffs and Texaco accepted, which is that any judgment reached by the Ecuadorian court system would be enforceable in the U.S. So this is not something that Chevron can laugh off, assuming the judgment goes against them. And it's a very significant case for that reason. We would argue perhaps the most important environmental trial taking place anywhere in the world today. The court case up till now in Ecuador has consisted, the most important part of the court case has consisted of a series of judicial inspections of field sites in the Ecuadorian Amazon. There were more than 100 scheduled. Basically, the court, lawyers for both sides, everyone involved in the case, has been visiting these field sites, which are part of Texaco's former concession, and scientific experts for each side have been taking water and soil samples and analyzing them and submitting those results to the court. There's been a very significant development on that in the last month, which is so far there have been 42 field inspections that have taken place, and the results are in, the scientific results from 35 of those. Last month, the judge decided that a remaining 64 scheduled field inspections did not need to take place. There was a motion and a counter motion from the plaintiffs and Chevron, respectively, but the judge decided that he had ample evidence on the basis of the field inspection so far to decide the case. And I don't wish to prejudge the court's decision in any way, but that looks like potentially a pivotal moment in the trial, and one more event or development in this trial that has gone badly, we would argue, for Chevron. And if you'd like, I can give you some of those statistics about the scientific results.
Absolutely.
Basically, there are water and soil samples taken from these sites by both sides. The most up-to-date statistics I have from the water samples, for example, is that of a total of 329 taken by both sides, 324 have shown some signs of contamination, and that includes 245 of Chevron's own 248 water samples. Of all 35 sites that we have results in from now, 100% show some signs of contamination, in some cases by orders of magnitude. I have the statistics here somewhere. Yes, there's in one case, for example, that really stands out, Lago d'Ors, a well site. The level of total petroleum hydrocarbons found in one sample was at 325 parts per million. In other words, this sample is a third total petroleum hydrocarbons, which are very toxic byproduct of the drilling process.
And how does that compare, say, to acceptable standards in the U.S. put forward by the EPA in terms of public safety? I mean, it's on an order of magnitude far beyond that, isn't it?
It's mind-boggling, frankly. And the issue of standards and norms and what should be applicable in Ecuador is a major issue in this court case. Chevron routinely cherry-picks standards and norms from around the world and various states in the U.S., always the most lax ones, and then presents them to the court as though they were relevant to Ecuadorian law, and usually they are not. Ecuadorian law, I should say, or standards, are lax compared to standards in California. Typically, they allow for about 10 times more contamination. But even there, in many cases, these samples have been over the Ecuadorian limit by an order of magnitude.
Simeon Tagle is director of communications for Amazon Watch. He's worked as a journalist for more than a decade, focusing on environmental and human rights issues in the UK and Latin America. We're talking about what Texaco then, which became Chevron Texaco, which is now called Chevron, has done in Ecuador for the last, four decades, and the trouble, legal and otherwise, it's in because of revelations about those activities and what they've done to communities and the environment in Ecuador. We have a link on our website, againstthegrain.org, both to Amazon Watch and also to ChevronToxico.com, which is the campaign website for this Chevron in Ecuador campaign. What happened, because shareholders and shareholder meetings of Chevron in the U.S. have begun to be affected by what's happened down in Ecuador, and I understand that an indigenous leader, a leader of the extinct Cofán people in the Ecuadorian Amazon, actually attended Chevron's annual general meeting in Houston this past April. What did he go there to say?
He went there to tell Chevron management and Chevron shareholders that his people are dying out and that they need urgent help and action. I think that was his message. It couldn't have been simpler. And at least as far as David O'Reilly, the CEO of Chevron, was concerned, his plea appears to have fallen on deaf ears. The Chevron management are clearly not interested in listening to that kind of message.
What about the ears of shareholders? To what extent has shareholder activism been generated by these recent revelations?
There has been quite a bit of shareholder activism going on. There are many shareholders, Chevron shareholders out there, who are extremely concerned about this problem that Chevron has created for itself in Ecuador. They're concerned that Chevron does the right thing, the humane thing as well, and resolves this issue. There have been several shareholder resolutions. There were two at the put forward at the last annual general meeting of Chevron back in April. One of them was calling on Chevron to adopt a worldwide and transparent and verifiable human rights policy. The other one called on Chevron to reveal or to publish itemized details of what it had spent on lawyers, PR experts, and lobbyists over the last few years to defend itself in Ecuador.
And I guess neither of these resolutions made it, but the second one got quite a bit of support, correct?
Yes, I think it got 25% support, which is actually more significant than it sounds. Many investors, particularly institutional investors, they tend to vote en bloc. They have certain sources of information that they go to, and basically they do what those sources of information recommend them to do regarding what resolutions they will or won't vote for. And so, and it's very difficult for organizations like Amazon Watch to in any way target or enter into a or to engage with those sources of information. So I think in the absence of that, to have achieved 25% support is significant. It may even be some kind of company record.
Well, this case has also brought forward the issue of the extent to which companies are honest and open about their activities around the world with their shareholders, the extent to which they disclose, for example, their activities and potential liabilities in connection with something like Chevron, formerly Texaco, in Ecuador. What do we know about what's happening to the company because of their possible non-disclosure of certain facts?
Well, Chevron are currently being investigated by the SEC. That's the Securities and Exchange Commission that regulates the New York Stock Exchange. This is the result of a complaint that Amazon Watch filed with the SEC back in February. And there are various issues going on here, but the bottom line is that Chevron management, we argue, have not been honest or forthright with their shareholders. They have not disclosed details that they should have done about what is a huge potential liability that the company now faces down in Ecuador. And this is without even talking about the moral issues. So far, the plaintiffs have won expert but highly provisional estimate of the remediation costs in Ecuador, which put the cost at $6.1 billion, so just over $6 billion. That statistic or that estimate didn't even take into account groundwater, which is crucial, particularly in an area of tropical rainforest. So we're having more reports done, but potentially that figure, that liability, could be even larger.
So a couple minutes left. What do we know then about, you said we might be 12 months away from a final decision in this huge landmark class action lawsuit now in Ecuador. Any sense of when the decision might come down and in which way the court might decide?
Okay, well, Chevron have been pursuing pretty questionable, not to overstate it, defense tactics both in and out of court, and a key part of that was delaying tactics. That's why they wanted these 64 inspections to take place. That could have taken another couple of years at least. Now that the judge has decided he's not going to go ahead with those 64 inspections, I think there is the potential now for the court to reach a decision in the first half of next year. Again, I don't want to prejudge the court's decision in any way, but I have to say that if I was Chevron executive right now, I'd be very, very concerned.
Is Chevron still operating in Ecuador?
No.
Simeon Tagle, Communications Director for Amazon Watch. We have a link again to both AmazonWatch.org on our website, AgainstTheGrain.org, as well as to the campaign website of what we're talking about, ChevronToxico.com. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.